Are you a man looking for an intensive program to help you overcome your sexually addictive behaviors? Gateway to Freedom is your answer. Gateway to Freedom is a three-day intensive workshop for men seeking to overcome sexually addictive behaviors. Whether married, single, or divorced, Gateway to Freedom will help men regain hope for a new life of purity and real contentment. The workshop is conducted by experts in the field of sexual addiction recovery. Your experts have over 35 years of combined experience. Read testimonials of workshop alumni at gatewaymen.com. Get all the info and register online at gatewaymen.com or call 1-800-49-PURITY.
Hi, my name is Jonathan, and I'm the founder of the Gateway to Freedom Workshop. I want to personally invite you to be part of our next intensive coming up November 15th through the 17th. So call us today at 1-800-49-PURITY or visit us online at gatewaymen.com.
Welcome to Pure Sex Radio, training men, educating women. Are you ready to get real and start living each day in purity? This dynamic program is designed to educate, encourage, and equip listeners with the tools necessary for living a life of sexual purity. Pure Sex Radio brings you the best in mobile talk radio. Listen to real-life struggles, learn how to overcome lust, pornography, and sex addiction, and get serious about purity.
Good day, radio listeners. Welcome to this week's edition of the Pure Sex Radio broadcast. We're glad to have you here with us. My name is Jonathan, and I'm here with my friend David Zahler out of California. David, how are you doing today?
Jonathan, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Excellent. Well, before we get started, I just want to remind you, listeners, we're grateful for your listening to us, and also especially grateful for those of you who decide to support us financially and through other means, as we are a listener-supported broadcast. And so, if any of you would like to learn about all the many ways that you can come and partner alongside of us, you can simply go to puresexradio.com and click on the donate button, and you can learn about all the ways that you can partner with this ministry. Well, David, we had you on here recently, and you were able to share kind of your story, both the front end of just all the brokenness and the addiction and all that, and then you were able to share also some of the recovery aspects and some of the insights. I wanted to have you back because I feel like there's so much more that we can talk about, especially regarding recovery and some of what I like to think of as the unexpected surprises that happen in recovery. Because I think a lot of people have a very, very narrow vision of what recovery is, mm-hmm. especially when it comes to sexuality and things mm-hmm. like that, that then they only engage it to a certain level.
Right.
And then they miss out on all of those surprises that kind of come
sure.
later on. So I want to see if we can go that direction, and
okay.
and maybe just off the top of your head, if you can tell our listeners maybe what have been some of the unexpected surprises that you've encountered. And first of all, give our listeners a time frame of sort of how long you've been on this recovery mm-hmm. journey, so they can kind of know how long. That this isn't something that's, these surprises don't come in 6 months.
Well, my surprises have been unfolding over the past 14 years. And that's been long enough for me to know that the surprises aren't done yet. There's more ahead of me. I know that my recovery began in crisis. I think that's how all of our recovery does. I know some people will perhaps feel guilty or feel compelled to be addressing an addiction, a porn addiction or a sex addiction or something. But crisis and pain are tremendous motivators. My process started with me coming in just wanting to change what I needed to change to make the pain go away. My problems were, behaviorally identified. And obviously, some behavioral changes needed to be made. But once the behavioral changes were made, what that really did is begin to uncover a whole bunch of things that really helped me to understand really what a miserable human being I was.
Well, let me pause right there, because I think what you're touching on is where a lot of people actually end up stopping.
Yeah.
Is because so many, don't you think they have a vision of recovery that says, if I just get these behaviors in line, that's really all it's about. So would you say that when you started seeing behaviors clean up, was it a surprise to you that there was more beyond just the behaviors cleaning up?
I'm not sure that, you know, I was so disconnected with my own reality, and I think I was just so lost in the confusion and the difficulty of it all, that I'm not sure if I could have really expressed it in those terms, but that was a reality.
Mm-hmm.
I was experiencing things that part of my internal world that I was so disconnected from that I didn't know how to tell anybody about them. I just had the sense that I was miserable, and I really missed the things that I, you know, my addictions and my addictions, which, as I stated in our earlier talk, were pornography, women chasing, of course, and then drugs and alcohol. With those things removed from me, I felt like the hole in a donut.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know what to make of myself, and I was I just was coming to grips with how deeply confused and sad I was.
So would you say that some of these surprises are things that you, the reason they're surprises is because you don't anticipate them. It's something you can only maybe recognize in hindsight that, mm-hmm. hey, okay, behaviors start getting cleaned up. Mm-hmm. You were such a mess and such mm-hmm. turmoil and crisis
mm-hmm.
that, for one, it's probably a pretty big vision even at that point to mm-hmm. say, could I even have cleaned up behaviors?
Sure.
And then once that starts happening, later on, maybe in hindsight, you go, oh, you know what? That opened a doorway
right.
to then getting to all of those core issues
right.
in my heart, my mind,
right.
all that.
You know, as a young single man who had grown up living this lifestyle that I'd lived for so long, I mean, I liked to do those things.
Right.
I liked to go out and drink and chase girls, and I liked to take drugs. I liked to look at pornography. I found it exciting. So when that was taken away from me, I didn't expect to begin to feel the kind of these compelling underlying issues, that there was more going on here, more driving my behaviors than just the fact that I like to do those things. In fact, here was part of my disconnect, is that, yes, I knew that I liked to do those things, but I would never tell anybody about them. Mm-hmm. I was ashamed of them. I would lie about them. I would minimize them. When I stopped doing them, that's when I really began to, you might say, my underlying issues began to kind of bubble to the surface, and I didn't know exactly what they were, but I had started to have a real sense that they were there.
So would you say that maybe addicts, one of their issues is that they don't actually know themselves, and that's then one of these things that can come out as mm-hmm. as sort of an unexpected surprise is mm-hmm. that. You know, you're sitting there and you're saying, I liked this and I liked that. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of a shallow understanding of yourself
sure.
to say, I do behaviors that in hindsight you realize they had a medicating quality. They had
right.
an escapism type quality. But in the moment you were just thinking, that's basically how well I know myself. I just want to do these things because they're fun. I like
right.
them. They're enjoyable. And then later in recovery, you begin to discover, like you said, the underlying issues, and you realize, I didn't even know who I
right.
was.
Well, and there's a tremendous sadness here, is that for so long, I was motivated to do these things that I liked to do, really in defiance of other things that I wanted to do more. I mean, honestly, I was not able to go out and live this, you know, the basically intoxicated life, and be the kind of human being that I truly wanted to be. I wasn't able to have the kind of relationships that I really wanted to have. And so, I began to really come to grips with the fact of how I had really been abusing myself and hurting myself for so long by essentially intoxicating and distracting myself abusing myself in defiance of what was really better for me and truly what was more core to who I, what my truest desires were. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's, and it was such a learning process. And really, even after 14 years, I'm still kind of learning about this and experiencing revelation, if you will, about my own God-given dignity. Mm-hmm. That I had never truly understood that before. And to me, life is hard. It was painful. So I was just trying to make the best of a painful, miserable life.
Did it ever surprise you how hard recovery was going to be? Or was that kind of, I mean, and the reason I'm asking that is because, yeah. You know, we've dealt with many, many sexual addicts.
Yeah.
And I think when we tell them recovery is going to be very, very hard, possibly the hardest thing you've ever done.
Sure.
There's usually this look or this expression that says, well, no, I understand it's hard, but they never really believe it's going to be that hard.
Well, it is that hard, but it's a different kind of hard.
Yeah, explain that.
Okay. Looking back now, I realize that my life with active addiction was much more painful, much more difficult than my life in recovery. And yet, one of the diabolical benefits of my life in addiction was that it kept me disconnected from that pain. It's like killing myself, you know, slicing off one toe at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And not quite knowing what you're doing. The intimidating part of recovery, and I don't want to say people warned me about it, but my counselors and the people guiding me in my recovery, they were honest with me. They wanted me to really be willing to bring my best effort into my recovery. And they did say, this is going to be hard, this is going to be difficult. Maybe the hardest thing you've ever really done intentionally.
Mm-hmm.
And it was painful because I was so not used to that. I was so habituated to avoiding my pain and then blinding myself and really denying the pain that I was creating for myself. It was, the recovery brought me several times where just crushing, heartbreaking tears.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it was the kind of pain that brought me esteem. When as I moved through it, even one inch at a time, one day at a time, I had an increasing sense of self-appreciation. I had the sense that, you know, I'm doing the right thing as opposed to trying to avoid the reality that I'm doing the wrong thing.
Yeah, and I want to kind of camp out there for a second because, you know, one of the biggest issues that we see in folks who develop a sexual addiction is just this debilitating shame,
yeah.
This sense of self-worthlessness.
Yeah.
And what I'm hearing from you is that there was this sort of surprising joy that began to emerge when you started realizing you have value intrinsic to your being, not dependent upon whether or not you are doing well or not.
Right.
And I think that's, you know, I love it when I see a guy begin to discover that in his recovery.
Yeah.
Because when guys just focus on, I got to just clean up this behavior.
Sure.
And they're not really tapping into their heart. They're missing out on that discovery of saying, you know, your worth is not tied to your performance or your behavior. And so share about kind of how that discovery started, maybe even reshaping recovery for you, because I think
that
has a huge ramification on then how we then pursue recovery,
just
because it's about this bubbling joy that starts to emerge.
Well, my first, back up even more, when you talk about the debilitating shame, that was really in my emotional bloodstream.
Mm-hmm.
From my earliest memories, Jonathan, I remember seeing myself, from my earliest memories, 6, 7, 8 years old, looking at pictures of myself, and, it hurts to tell you this, but I would get sick to my stomach.
Mm.
I mean, even as a little child looking at family photos and wanting to vomit at just seeing my own pictures.
Mm.
And I carried that with me. right on into adulthood. And in recovery, my first healthy move and my healthy embracing of a recovery life was just having to do with, okay, let's quit looking at porn, let's quit chasing women, let's quit drinking alcohol and taking drugs. And believe me, those were all necessary and important steps.
Absolutely.
But that was my first baseline of success. And thank God, with the help of others and with God's grace, I had some success there. I had good support, was able to make that happen. Over time, I began to understand that recovery is about learning to live the life that God has given me to live it in serenity, in surrender, learning to embrace life's difficulties and challenges as opportunities, so it's not just about what I do, but it's who I am, and that God will give me everything that I need to be successful today. You know, I may not be successful in every decision I make. I have yet to get through a day without sinning.
Sure.
But, you know, by God's grace, I don't have to do that. Jesus has taken care of that for me. Mm-hmm. I'm able to live my life as someone who can assimilate the love of God and allow that to empower me to share that with someone else.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned serenity. Mm-hmm. And I want our listeners to know that we are sitting in a building that used to be a greenhouse, and we are in Portland, Oregon, just outside of Portland, Oregon, in the mountains, just off the Columbia River, and we're at one of our Gateway to Freedom workshop events. Now, I want to ask you, would this have even registered on your scale of a place that you would have found joy in 15 years ago? Or would you have even imagined yourself at an event like this 15 years ago to observe and to be part of this in kind of a ministerial type way and to be hanging out with other sexual addicts? I mean, in a setting like this, I mean, you talk about serenity, and it's kind of like you're in the atmosphere this weekend of what kind of the payoff is for recovery, saying, I can live in a place where I'm not self-absorbed, where I'm able to, I mean, I'm even wondering if 15 years ago you could have even enjoyed the nature around you in this setting, because you probably would have been so figuring out, when am I going to get to downtown Portland to get some heroin or to get, it's like, where am I going to go get some drugs, you know?
Well, you've kind of nailed me in all that. It's true. I, 15 years ago, I remember going to several men's functions or men's retreats, and I would drive there, and my money would be paid, and I would go to the opening first, you know,
session or event
or whatever it was, and then I would get in my car and leave. I would find a way to make an excuse. I would make sure that someone said something to offend me, make me angry, and I would leave cussing under my breath, spinning my tires, pulling out, and likely drive to the closest bar or strip joint or whatever. I did that countless times. To be here at the Gateway to Freedom conference, to see the men coming in and to see them handed hope, as if they're handed, It feels to me like when Jesus was feeding the 5,000, he just handed out, you know, portions to each person as their need. And this is what happens at these conferences. You know, and I'm a realist. I know that not everyone who comes to these kinds of conferences goes home instantaneously healed.
Oh, sure.
None of them do.
Right.
But to know, for them to come and understand that, oh my gosh, there are people here who, they know my story. They're me. They know that shame. They know that debilitating anguish. But their life is different now.
And see, that's the key that I think so many addicts in recovery who maybe don't reach that point where they realize some of these discoveries that are saying, my desires can actually change. My life's focus can sure. change. And it goes from, to me, one of the most unexpected joys or surprises that has happened on my own personal recovery journey is that my very desires could be transformed.
Sure.
I never would have believed, listen, when I first started recovery, it didn't, it certainly registered in my mind. I thought, yeah, this is about changing behavior, to stop acting out,
right.
and that somehow joy would come from stopping.
Yeah.
But it never registered when I entered recovery that any of my lustful desires or mm-hmm. cravings, or that none of that could be transformed
right.
to where my passions and the things I desire, the things I enjoy doing today, right. are light years away from what I used to enjoy doing.
Right.
And I think that's one of those, you know, unexpected surprises that's joyful. And I think the key here, though, don't you believe, is just this, there's a time element of remaining engaged in recovery.
Yeah.
That some of these things just will never happen in that first year of recovery.
No. And, you know, I tell you, my first year of recovery, I don't remember ever really having the belief that I was going to be in recovery for the rest of my life.
Mm-hmm.
It just never even dawned on me that that was going to be possible. But when one day at a time went by, and I was 1 year sober, I suddenly was, this isn't too bad.
Yeah.
I think I'll just kind of keep doing this. What has been such a huge shift for me, such a big change for me, is where, and you alluded to this, is that, you know, my entire life had been, you know, push-ups. And I figured, okay, if I can get enough sobriety, you know, if I can have victory over this, then I can be happy.
Mm-hmm.
Problem is, I never had enough victory to be happy.
Yeah.
Today I'm finding that I have been gifted with joy, even though I'm not always victorious.
Sure.
And that in God's crazy grace, nothing is wasted.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things, and you and I were chatting about this in the car the other day, talking about and remembering and looking back at the calamity of my life, the misery, the abuse, both that was done to me and that I did to myself, and realizing that none of it was ever wasted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I still carry some scars with me.
Sure.
But they're guide points for me.
Mm-hmm.
And that my history, even the most miserable of it, has become a part of something that continues to encourage me and guide me and compel me to go in a healthy direction.
Yeah, and I wanted to ask you too, would you have been able to see yourself 15 years ago having deep friendships with a bunch of addicts in a healthy way? Not in a let's go do drugs and let's go do sex.
Right.
And
right.
But I mean, when I talk about, I think you understand what I mean when I say friendship.
Right.
Because quite honestly, when you're in addiction, anybody that's your friend, you're just using each other.
Absolutely.
It's all a user's game. It's all self-centered.
Absolutely.
And to me, I think friendship, like genuine friendship, is one of those unexpected surprises, because I think even entering recovery, most addicts think, this is still all about me, just me getting fixed,
right.
me getting cleaned up,
right.
me.
Right.
And when you really start to engage recovery in an authentic, honest way,
mm-hmm.
you start realizing, well, it's not about me, because I have to admit that I'm powerless. I have to admit I need help. I have to admit all these things that are
right.
essentially saying, I have shown that I'm unable to
right.
live a clean life. And then you start engaging other people who are on that same journey,
right.
and you start realizing we actually connect best in our brokenness.
Yeah. Absolutely. There's a resounding experience I have that kind of moves between my head and my heart. And it's a message that tells me that I have enough. I have all that I need. In fact, I have more than I need.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas before, I was always looking to get what I needed. And I, you know what?
And it never measured up, right?
It never did. And I could be charming, and I could be dutiful, and I would be, you know, I worked hard. I mean, even though with my drug addiction, I still kept a job, and you know, and I did my obligations. And, you know, I dotted my I's and crossed my T's and always came up looking like, you know what, it was like an addict needing the next fix. Mm-hmm. So my addictions weren't just related to these things. My addiction was related just this sense of perpetual neediness. Mm-hmm. Now, there, like I mentioned, there is this overwhelming sense that God will always give me everything I need. In fact, he will give me more than what I need. In fact, so much more that I would just prefer to share some of that. Mm-hmm. And as I share it, then that becomes a way that I end up receiving something unexpected. And that's the relationships. And, you know, my, you know, I have never been married. I don't have any children. But, you know, my family connections are immense.
Yeah.
And that is the family relationships and continuity that God has given me in my recovery experience so far exceeds anything I ever had before. Mm-hmm.
I have a friend in ministry, and he's always had a very strained, very difficult relationship with his brother. But he has such a profoundly impactful ministry and connection, and mm-hmm. and he works at our Gateway to Freedom workshops, mm-hmm. and he gets to meet and invest in all of these men's lives, and mm-hmm. he gets emotional when he talks about it, because he says, I have more brothers now than I know what to do with.
Yeah,
you know, so I think, and what would you say in our closing minutes here is, I mean, how long would you say that you were in recovery before some of these deeper insights started to make connections? I mean, like maybe 2 weeks or, you know.
Well, I do know this. Is that even from day one of bringing forth my best sincere effort, which if can be measured on some objective scale was probably, you know, very minimal. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously we cannot objectify or we cannot
quantify yeah.
that. But when I started getting sincere with God, God brought in his matching funds that far exceeded what I was bringing to the table. And that started early on. I remember even after a few months feeling both ongoing craving for the drugs. I had left, I would call them kind of pseudo relationships with two or three women that I'd been involved with. And I had left them behind, and I missed them terribly. And yet at the same time, I had a sense that there was something of value that was being delivered to me. Mm-hmm. I could not describe it to this day. I can't describe it right now. But it was there.
Hope.
So well said. Thank you, Jonathan.
And I think there's always going to be a season in recovery that's the detox season, where you do have to get things out of your system, physically, emotionally, spiritually, all of that. And then that's why I think in that particular season, you won't necessarily be able to as readily see some of these unexpected surprises that we've been talking about. Right. What would you say in our closing minute here to the listeners who maybe they've come through that detox phase, but they're struggling with persisting forward, and they're wondering, is there more to this? And they're kind of in that limbo stage.
Well, I know for me, when I was in that limbo stage, the hope that you spoke of was very simple for me, is that if I went back to my addictions, things would be at least as bad as they were before. They're probably going to be much worse.
Yeah.
But if I kept focused, if I kept following my program and sticking close with those who were guiding me and following God the best I knew how, that my future was going to be better than my past. Mm-hmm. And that's all that I wanted.
Yeah.
You know, I wasn't, what I've received was is so much far beyond that, but I just wanted a better life going forward than what I had in the past. And God more than blessed me with that.
Well, that's our time for today. So, David, thanks for being with us today. And listeners, we're glad you were with us and look forward to seeing you back here again next week on the Pure Sex Radio broadcast.
Pure Sex Radio is paid for by Be Broken Ministries. Visit us online at puresexradio.com.